What's going on, y'all? Welcome back to the next episode of the Big Orange Buzz podcast. I'm your host, Samuel Fletcher, and today we're going to recap some of the games a little bit that went on this past week with basketball and baseball. Lots of games to recap, give a small look ahead, and I really want to talk about Tennessee and make a big emphasis on the tournament because now we're getting into March. It's getting into the time where everything counts, and so you got to really got to win some games. You know, Tennessee wants to win out now at this point to potentially have a spot at getting a one seed. So we'll talk about the tournament where Tennessee may look to line up and, people's bracketology and things like that. But first, we'll go ahead and start looking at the baseball team. Really not a whole lot to go over. It's just, another week of wins. You're talking about a couple teams that Tennessee, they shouldn't have had any problem with, and they really didn't. I will say High Point was a, they were a tough team, and we kind of knew to expect High Point to have a little bit of fight in them going into that opening game and that midweek game, just because High Point, we saw them give the Rebels some trouble, knocked off Ole Miss 1 out of 3 when they played them. It's a team that they've got some offensive weapons. They've got a lot of different pitchers they can use, and it's not one of those typical midweek type of games. You got to imagine, too, at the same time, Tennessee's not going to throw out all of their arms that they're going to throw on weekends. You want to, save arms for weekend games, and Bowling Green is arguably worse than High Point, but it's just the principle is still there. Tennessee ended up defeating High Point 7-4 on Tuesday. It never really was all that close. It was a good one to watch if you're a Tennessee fan, but it was a little bit sluggish there at times, but I think it was a game that was never really in doubt. You saw several different guys come in off the mound for Tennessee. Matthew Dallas started. He had some trouble with walks, and that's kind of been the theme of this week. If there was any negative takeaway from the midweek and the weekend games, it's just been walking people, and a lot of them have come from some of the smaller arms. Matthew Dallas, he started okay, and then he got into trouble where he walked several in a row. He ended up with 5 walks. Austin Hunley came in, and he looked okay, but he kind of came in a tough spot where Matthew Dallas had walked a few batters already, and so you give up a couple earned runs to him there. Chris Thomas came in. He looked good, but he had to leave fairly quickly because he had a little bit of discomfort. So then you got to get Andrew Binke going really fast, kind of on a dime there. And Andrew Binke comes in, and he looks okay at first. Then he starts to struggle. Kirby Connell came in and took kind of that cleanup role, and he did good. He went for a really long 1.2 innings pitched. And if you don't know, Kirby Connell is typically a one-batter facer. He's a situational pitcher where he's not going to come in and, pitch 3 or 4 innings out of the bullpen. But Nate Snead came in after Kirby and cleaned it up from there. Nate Snead hit 101 on the radar, so I think that was the big takeaway from that game. Not a bad game, but the walks were definitely a concern. And that did carry over a little bit into the weekend for some of the younger pitchers. Tennessee did, in fact, run rule Bowling Green every game that they played this weekend. So it was a good series to watch. A lot of offense for the Vols. Billy Amick just absolutely went off. Blake Burke had a great weekend. You're talking about, a team that really has no business hanging around Tennessee. They never really did. And they did give, like I said, they gave some of Tennessee's younger pitchers a little bit of trouble. But it was good to see Tennessee get a lot of guys some experience. Young pitchers, even if they struggled, need to get them some reps, get them some experience. Younger guys, get them some at-bats. And it really just speaks to how deep Tennessee is. They've got guys that can roll around, rotate, and kind of play in there. The first game ended up winning 11-1. Causey was great. He had to start because A.J. Russell dealing with a little bit of, some soreness, I believe, in his side. Causey came in, did a great job. Dylan Loy came in and finished the game out. Moved on to game 2. Tennessee ends up winning 12-1. Another run rule for Tennessee. It's one that was never particularly close. Drew Beeng did give up a leadoff home run, which was then answered by two home runs by Christian Moore, Blake Burke, and then later on, Billy Amick homered. Peebles had a good hit in there. So it's just a good game for the offense again. Pitching-wise, Drew Beeng did what he needed to do. He gave up some hits early. Most of those hits came earlier on, but he settled in nicely after the leadoff home run. He didn't really get rattled. So that just kind of speaks to him being a veteran for this group. You know, he's not going to get rattled. He's not going to be the guy that you're going to come take out just because he gives up one run. You're going to have to rely on him to kind of battle his way out of some of those tough spots. Ended up finishing with 9 strikeouts, though, so I think he's okay. Aaron Combs came in to finish out the game in that last inning there. Had 1 strikeout. Really like Aaron Combs. He's very wiry. He's a good one to come out of the bullpen. I could see him maybe even being the type of guy that's kind of a closer for Tennessee. Maybe moving into that role. That was game 2. Game 3, just finished up watching that not too long ago today. This is Sunday as the time I'm recording it. Tennessee ended up winning 16-6. You had Derek Schaefer on the mound. He struggled a little bit. You had Matthew Dallas come in. Just did not look great. Then you had Kirby Connell come in and clean up duty. Dylan Loy was in there. He struggled a little bit. Just it wasn't a great day for the younger guys, if we're being honest. It was one that you probably want to just kind of sweep under the rug for the young guys. But the good thing is, too, and depth pieces like Kirby Connell, Xander Seacrest, those are guys that may be able to come out of the bullpen and help them out. So now, after this weekend, I guess the bigger thing, more than recapping these games that we need to talk about, would be do we have an established Sunday starter? The health concerns with guys like A.J. Russell and Chris Stamos, and things like that for the pitching staff. So as far as the pitching staff goes, I'm thinking Chris Stamos and A.J. Russell, from the sound of it, they'll be good to go, especially by the time, conference play rolls around here in a few weeks. I don't think there's really any rush to get them back, but, this is a tough week coming up for them. They've got Kansas State coming up in the midweek slate. Not a great team, but, it's a Power 5 conference contender. It's a team that's going to make some noise in the Big 12, probably be decent, shock some teams, and you don't want to get upset in this midweek slate. I remember, last year Boston College came to town, and I think it just really caught Tennessee off guard, which Boston College was a really solid team. But, Kansas State solid, and then you got Illinois this coming weekend as well. So it would be nice to have those guys back. But, I think Tennessee is deep enough to where if they had to play without them, to get those guys a little bit of extra rest, it shouldn't be a problem. But it's just going to be one of those things we're going to have to kind of play it by ear. It kind of could give you some different looks as far as your Sunday starter goes, because, if Causey has to come back in, then he's probably going to be back in the Friday spot. I would expect Russell to be back, but if he isn't, Causey would be there, and then Sunday I'm not sure what you do. And the reason I say that is because I believe if Russell's healthy and if Drew Beeng is out there, you probably got your Friday and Saturday guy. And Sunday, I don't believe that Xander Seacrest has played well enough to earn that spot. I just don't. I could see him really, really struggling in conference play. I really hate that because he's a veteran guy. I really wanted to see him step up, but I just don't think he has the stuff. I think he could be okay coming out of the bullpen. Certainly not a closer. He struggled coming in there today against Bowling Green. But I don't really know where to put him right now, but it's certainly not going to be a starter for me on Sunday. And then you've got some conversations that could be had about Nate Snead. Nate Snead, it's hard to keep a guy that's throwing triple digits on the bench and warming up in the bullpen. You want to get that guy going early. But at the same time, it's really nice and it's a luxury to have somebody that can do that type of stuff coming out of the bullpen, because, a lot of times you work away from a team starter and that's where you really start to score your runs and do your damage. You kind of reverse psychology on him with Nate Snead, because maybe you come off of a guy like Xander Seacrest, who they projected to be a starter early, and then Nate Snead comes in. It's like, whoa, this is tougher than it was before. Now we're more tired. So you get a guy like Nate Snead coming out of the bullpen, that can really play to your advantage in some of those situations. So I don't know if they'll put him as the starter on Sundays, but I would look, you know, maybe A.J. Causey could be coming in because he's got some really good stuff. But he's another tricky one. You know, if you send him out of the bullpen, he's going to be a tricky one. I really think Tennessee would like to have Derek Schaefer if he was ready. I don't know that he's ready. Kind of struggles with control at time. And, you know, you can have a young starter that struggles at times. Because Schaefer is, you know, he's definitely talented enough to where he can battle and get out of some tough spots. And even if he doesn't go super deep into a ball game, it's not the end of the world. Because then if you start a guy like Derek Schaefer, you've got the luxuries of having a guy like Nate Snead that can come in for several innings. You've got guys like Causey that can come in if need be. So, you know, it just depends how they're going to play it. But right now, I would really like to see either Snead or Causey, just because it's really hard to keep those guys as good as they're pitching. It's hard to keep them in the bullpen. And also seeing what guys like Derek Schaefer have done. But then again, at the same time, I don't know if Derek Schaefer, Matthew Dallas, I don't know how reliable they're going to be to go multiple innings coming out of the bullpen. So I'm just not really sure. I'd almost lean towards maybe a, you know, Derek Schaefer, maybe Matthew Dallas, since he's a lefty, starting. And despite how hard it is to take, you know, A.J. Causey or Nate Snead and keep them in the bullpen, I almost feel like that's a good spot for him, because I'd rather have those guys come later in the game and kind of mop up duty where they can go a long time and kind of wear guys down a little bit and, you know, get the younger guys, get the freshmen in there, get them some experience, get them in there early. And, you know, you're also in a Sunday role too, so, you know, you got two chances ahead of that to go ahead and win a series. So a lot of times on Sundays, hopefully, you know, if all things play out well, it's not always going to be the end of the world if you do leave and drop that game. Nobody wants to lose, but, you know, I'm just saying that you got to play your chips the right way, and having electric guys like that out of the bullpen is a luxury. And it's a lot of things. It's one of those things that not a lot of teams will have the ability to do as well as Tennessee will be able to do with those guys coming out. So, you know, I'm thinking maybe one of the freshmen would be my most likely candidate. I couldn't imagine it being Xander Sechrist. If they do, I think that's a mistake. No hate to Xander Sechrist. I just don't like his stuff right now. I think he'd be more, you know, prone for like a midweek starter. Or maybe coming out of the bullpen. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what they do, what they decide to do from there. But that would be my prediction. I mean, as far as the lineup goes, really, I mean, I think the lineup's kind of concreted itself around Christian Moore, Blake Burke, and Billy Amick being the 1-2-3. From there, you've got a little bit of wiggle room with Kaveris Tiers behind him, Cannon Peebles, Cal Stark. You know, if Cal Stark's playing, he's probably going to be down in the lineup, but Cannon Peebles will probably be right behind Tiers. You'll probably have Dreiling in there, and despite Dreiling struggling at times, you know, he's displayed his power a little bit today. You know, he's too big of a home run threat to keep on the bench a lot. And then that's where you run into some difficulty with your next guys, because, one, before we even talk about the outfield, which is probably even more of a, you know, coin toss of who's going to play day-to-day, the only one that I think is concrete for sure is Kaveris Tiers. Playing every day, but at shortstop you got Dean Curley, and he seems fine after the injury, so I don't think that's a concern. But man, he's played good, and you know, going into this year, Ariel Antigua was considered the favorite to be the starter at shortstop, and he's got that hand injury, and so he hasn't been able to play. Well, I don't know how you look at Dean Curley, and as good as he's been playing, unless he just goes into a big slump, it's hard to tell him that you're putting Ariel Antigua in over him. And I know that Ariel Antigua is thought of to be even more talented. But it's just tough to imagine. So, not sure what they're going to do right there. I really like Dean Curley at shortstop, though, because he makes some plays sometimes that's just really tough to make. And I think Antigua is probably more than capable, too. But, it could be tough. It definitely is going to be a tough decision for Tony Vitello. That's for sure. But yeah, outside of that, the outfield it's really tough as well, because you've got Dreiling, who's really tough to take out. I don't think they will. Kaveris Tiers has cemented himself in the lineup. And then you got Hunter Ensley playing in center field, who's, we know that he does have some power, He definitely can put the ball in play, and he has gotten off to a really slow start this year. Defensively, he's been great. He's been everything you could ask. He's made every play that's come his way. But offensively, he's really struggled at times. Hasn't displayed a whole lot of power. He's just left a little bit on the, you know, left to be desired, left a little bit on the table. So I feel like with guys like Robin and Dalton Bargo, there's a lot of rotating that they can do. You know, they can rotate Kavarius Tears to center field because he's good enough to play it. And there's no problem with that. I have no problem with that. And I almost would rather see, you know, Dalton out there and DH Robin Villeneuve, or, you know, vice versa, and have, you know, Dreiling in right field, have Robin in left field, and DH and Dalton Bargo. So there's a lot of options they can do there, and it's hard to keep Bargo and it's hard to keep Villeneuve on the bench because they're such good bats. And quite frankly, I think they've produced more than Inslee has in limited appearances. And now Inslee's appearances are starting to get more limited because I think that Vitello's trying to, you know, make some decisions and figure out what he wants to roll out there to start. But I would look at the outfield as kind of seeing something that's going to change quite a bit throughout the year. I think that Kavarius Tears can roll over, play center, and somebody can take Inslee's spot in the batting order if they need to. But I could also see Hunter Inslee picking it up. So that's one that we're just going to have to play it by ear. I think that you'll see Inslee out there for one or two games on a weekend, and then I think you'll see, you know, Robin and Dalton kind of rotating in and out there too. I don't think Rhys Chapman has played well enough to earn himself a spot out there. And that stinks because he's a guy that we know he's got some power. He's got some spark to him and some flair in the bat, but I don't think that he's going to get out there either. So we'll see what happens with the outfield. I expect a lot of rotations to go down every single day. But I do think the one thing that is for sure is that top order in the lineup is, you know, with Simo, Burke, and Billy Amick, I don't think that's going to be changing anytime soon. So looking forward to moving into conference play, and we'll talk a little bit more about that next week. You know, like I said, they've got Kansas State and Illinois, two really good teams, but two teams that Tennessee should win. Tennessee should beat Kansas State in the midweek, in my opinion, and I do think that Tennessee should win the series. If you drop one against Illinois, that's not the end of the world, especially if it comes on Sunday, since that's not really ironed out fully. But I expect Tennessee to win overall the series and kind of potentially even sweep the week again, which would be nice to see. So we'll talk about that next week and kind of recap those games and any other expectations, how I'm thinking they're going to, you know, move people around and all that fun stuff. But yeah, so getting straight into basketball now, Tennessee coming off of two really fun games to watch. Both games were huge for Tennessee, and I'm kind of surprised, honestly, because not that I thought that Tennessee couldn't do it, but I really thought that Tennessee might drop one to Alabama because they've dropped some on the road. But we'll talk about that in a second. First, they played Auburn in the midweek. On Wednesday, they beat Auburn 92-84. Connect just absolutely went off. Connect had 39 points. Johnny Broome had a good game, but Tennessee was just a little bit bigger than Johnny Broome. Auburn did go on their runs, but Tennessee was able to answer, and Connect really took a lot of that on himself. And sometimes Connect's going to have to do that, and there's no problem with that. But then, you know, games like Alabama roll around. Whereas with Alabama, Tennessee really struggled with Connect to get him going because Alabama was taking him away. And so you had to get a lot of other people involved. So you'd look at the box score here. Jonas Adu had 12. Connect only had 13. Ziegler, 18. Vescovi, 8. Josiah Jordan-James, 11. Toby Awaka, 2. Jordan Ganey, 9. Meshack, 8. And he was 2-for-2 from the perimeter. So when you get guys like Meshack and they're able to contribute, score some threes, and just play good defense as well too, maybe one of the best and just most physical defensive performance I've seen from Vescovi. And Meshack, he just deserves an award. Typically a guy you don't see come out of his shell as much, but man, he made his buckets count. But you know, that's what happens. And Tennessee's got to be able to have guys that can step up. When a team tells you, we don't think you're good enough to beat us with everybody else you have, so we're going to take away Connect, and we're going to make you beat us with your other guys. And Tennessee stepped up to the challenge, and they said, okay, bet, we'll do it. And they did. And it was such a fun game to watch. A lot of back and forth. You know, Alabama ended up leading the game for quite a bit of time there in the middle part of the game. Tennessee came out real hot. Then they started airballing a lot. Rick Barnes said it was probably the most airballs he's ever seen by Tennessee. But Tennessee did go on to win that game, 81-74. Points spread out quite a bit. And that was something that I really like to see. And I actually almost enjoy those wins more than I do just a Dalton Connect showcase, because as much as I love Dalton Connect and I want him to win player of the year and all that good stuff, I want this team to be good all around, and I want them to make a deep run in March. And so that's what we're going to get into now, is can this team make a run in March? Where's their seeding going to be projected at and all that good stuff? Can Tennessee make a one seed? Tennessee most definitely can make a one seed at this point in time. They've got South Carolina and Kentucky this week to wrap up the regular season. And then we'll get to see where they're seated at. And so they got one road game against South Carolina, which is going to be tough. But, you know, South Carolina is definitely beatable. And if Tennessee plays like they have been playing, I see no reason why Tennessee should not win that game. And then you got Kentucky at Tennessee. Kentucky, you know, they score a lot of points. But, again, you see in games like when they played Arkansas this past week, Kentucky ended up winning, but they won a 111-102 over Arkansas. And if you would have told me that Arkansas scoring 102 on anybody, they're probably winning that game. It's just, you know, Kentucky's game plan has kind of been, I'm going to outscore my opponent. I'm going to be better. I'm going to be more physical. Not that I'm going to be more physical, but I'm just going to outscore you. I'm just going to score you to death. And I think that Calipari probably is playing to his strengths right now, because he knows that they don't have the most physical team and they're not the best defenders. So, you know, game plan's probably just switch. You know, we're not going to try to be good at something we're not. We're just going to put up as many points as possible. And, you know, it works for him at times, but I don't see that working, not in Knoxville. So I really, really like Tennessee's chances to get to the one seed. South Carolina almost actually worries me more than Tennessee and Kentucky. South Carolina on the road, I could see that being a problem for Tennessee, especially kind of middle of the week, coming off of a tough road game in Alabama. But, you know, if Tennessee wins that, I would say they've all but locked up a one seed, because you'll have Houston most likely going to get a one seed. They've got UCF and Kansas. Should win both of those games, probably going to be a one seed. Even if they lose one, probably a one seed. Purdue, kind of same thing. They got Illinois, Wisconsin. Unless they drop both of those, which I don't think is happening. Heck, as much as they love Purdue, they probably could lose both of those games and they probably would get a one seed. Then you've got Connecticut, most definitely going to be a one seed. But then you got a couple teams, you know, very close to Tennessee in that race behind them. Marquette, Arizona, Kansas, Iowa State, North Carolina, Duke, Auburn, all going into this past week, were 21-6, and some of those records have changed now. But Arizona knocked off both of their opponents, so they'll be holding the same record as Tennessee. Marquette lost, so they may not. Kansas, they lost to Baylor, so they may not. So I think that the battle for that last spot could come down to Tennessee and Arizona. And if you look at who Tennessee has to play and who Arizona has to play, there's no reason that Arizona will be jumping Tennessee. They're playing UCLA and USC, two just not good basketball teams. And Tennessee has got two top 25 programs, and one of them being on the road. So if Tennessee handles business and they win out, there's no reason they should not be a one seed, in my mind. And unless they lose badly, I think Tennessee deserves to be able to lose one and still get to be a one seed. I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, if Tennessee wins out, they're not only will they probably be a one seed, they'll also probably, or not probably, they will win the SEC in the regular season, something that is just a huge accomplishment, huge achievement for them. Tennessee will, you know, and be in a good spot to make a run in the SEC tournament. And, of course, that's not the tournament that everyone's concerned with. But it's always good to have a good showing there and kind of, you know, build some momentum going into the March Madness tournament. So, you know, I like Tennessee's chances. We'll talk a little bit more next week, too, about, like, how deep of a run they potentially could make. But I definitely like Tennessee's chances to earn that last one seed spot. And people don't think that's important, but you can look at Tennessee in the past and where they've been seeded at. And a lot of times Tennessee just does not get the luck of the draw. You know, last year you end up having to play Duke in like your second game if you advance. And they handled business there. But then, you know, you got to go play Florida Atlantic, who's a really good team. So being a one seed, you know, you're playing the number 16 team in the bracket. And it's really embarrassing to lose to that team. But as long as you go out there and handle business, you know, that's almost it's like having a bye. But you're still staying in rhythm, staying warm. So I really like their chances if they do get a one seed to, you know, win a couple games, maybe make a, you know, Elite Eight. I don't know how far they'll get. It all depends on seeding and, you know, who they have to play. And we'll talk about that when the tournament final ranking spots and all that stuff is released. But until then, you know, I think – safe to say, if Tennessee wins, they will be a one seed. And I think Dalton Connect has good chances, really good odds to win SEC Player of the Year. It's really close race between him, Reeves at Kentucky, and Mark Sears at Alabama. So it's going to be interesting to see who they end up going with. It really wouldn't blow me away if anyone gets it. And I think they've all played hard, and I think everyone deserves a good shot at it. But if you look at the most impactful player to a team, I do think by far that Dalton Connect has been the most impactful. Because even in games like yesterday where they decided, I'm just going to take Dalton Connect away since he's that important, that again just speaks to how important he is to that team, because drawing so much attention, it allows other guys to get clear and get open shots too. So even if he's not going off, somebody else is stepping up when Tennessee wins. And so, you know, Dalton Connect, he's important to this team in more ways than just one. And so are Tennessee's veterans, man. Josiah Jordan-James and Santiago Vesqui, they've, you know, had a bumpy ride at times, but Tennessee would not be in the spot they are right now without the veteran leadership of guys like that. So, you know, if they ever somehow come across this, I hope that they know that they're loved by Tennessee fans, and that their impact over the last several years that they've been here has just been astronomical for Tennessee, and they've made every minute of Tennessee basketball more enjoyable just by their presence. And you talk about guys, it's just some really good dudes out there too, man. So I really hope they do well. Hope they finish out the season strong, and we'll see what happens from there. But yeah, that's going to do it for this episode. I appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll go over some recapping next week. Probably look at a little bit more of a deep dive into conference play, as that'll be starting up next week in baseball. We'll talk a little bit about the, you know, tournament as we'll be getting one step closer to that. Talk a little bit about the SEC tournament and all that fun stuff coming up on next week's episode. So I appreciate you guys listening. You can find me on social media at Big Orange Buzz on Instagram, at Big Orange Buzz _ on Twitter. Shoot me a message, say what's up, and we can chat about Tennessee sports, whatever. We'll see you guys next week on the next episode. And as always, go Vols.